All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Blue Grit Radio. This is your host, Eric, and I'm here with a guest I'm pretty excited about, and I'm sure you'll be excited about too. I am with Audrey Andrade. Audrey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. Really happy to be here.
So, Audrey, you are many things. You are a veteran. You are a wellness blogger. You are a nutrition coach. You're a practitioner of BJJ. And so, like, I was literally just asking Audrey how she wanted to be introduced, and super chill. She's just like, whatever you want to say. But there's so many things. And so I hope to be able to dive into all those things. But Audrey, if you can just start out by introducing yourself to the audience.
Hi, everyone. Audrey Andrade here. I am a happy wellness blogger. I love to post on simple things that you can do every single day to just stay consistent with your health goals. I served in the Navy as a surface warfare officer for about 7.5 years. I separated from the Navy last year in September. Thank goodness.
Thank you for your service, by the way.
Thank you. And now I am a full-time writer, and I'm just excited to be able to help people in the way I can. As you said, I do roll jiu-jitsu, but I am a newbie. I just want that to be clear. I started early this year, so please don't take any jiu-jitsu advice from me.
Well, I think that the biggest jiu-jitsu advice of being a newbie also is that you're doing the thing, and that's like 90% of it, right? Just doing it and being humble.
Yeah, showing up, leaving your ego at the door, believe me. It's like I get choked out a few times. I'm like, okay, what can I learn from this?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, fantastic. So your Navy career, is that something that you always knew you wanted to do, or when did you decide that was going to be the path for you?
Yeah, so in regards to the Navy, so I was in high school, and it was about fall my senior year, and I was thinking about my future, as most seniors in high school do, and I realized that I'm poor, my family's poor, and there's no way, and there's not enough scholarships out there to afford the colleges in California. So I really thought long and hard about that. And I went to a recruiter and I said, hey, I want to join the Navy. It seems like there's some great benefits. And kudos to my recruiter. She said, I think you'd be better off at the Naval Academy. So I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. I didn't even know what the difference was between officer and enlisted. I, to be honest, all I knew was that there's an admiral somewhere and a general somewhere, and that was or
yeah. You've heard these ranks at some point in your life or in movies.
Yeah, all I've heard was, you know, any movies I've ever seen. So I decided, okay, I'm going to just apply to this Naval Academy thing. Horribly long application. People underestimate it. You have to get a recommendation from Congress. You have to pass a physical test. You obviously turn in an essay, be academically sound. And it took a couple months to actually finish the application. And then I got in. And I attended the Naval Academy, graduated 2015. And it was a challenge in itself just being there. They really make you work for it. And I don't know how many of your audience ever graduated from the service academy or were officers in the service. But it is a different culture for sure. I felt like I did not fit in. And I thought to myself, I made a huge mistake. These are congressmen's sons. These are the daughters of senators. These are these like people that are really high in society. And here I was, prior foster kid at the Naval Academy, and I just felt so out of place. And it was really challenging to make friends. A lot of different personalities there. Thankfully, I made a few that kept me sane, and I graduated on time, thankfully, and 7 and a half years later, I am here in sunny Florida and living my best life. So my short, long story short.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's so cool that you got the Naval Academy route, and that means you're no slouch, right? And so, but it's interesting because I talk to so many people that I work with in first responder work or people that are applying that come from a military background, and generally people go enlisted and they meet people from all different walks all around the country and beyond, rich, poor, you know, every race and culture, religion, right? And then it's almost like you don't have that diverse experience, in, at least in entry, when you go to like an officer candidacy school or the academy, because you're mentioning a more niche pocket that generally filters to that. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Not to say, you know, there wasn't diversity there. There was. But I will say it was a generally posh population. And you just had to, that was where I realized you had to politic your way around, and who do you talk to? Who do you not talk to? How do you present yourself? And that was that was how I initially started to learn that part of the Navy. I didn't realize how important that would be as an officer as I transitioned to being a division officer on two separate warships, and then later on at Camp Lejeune. It is a lot of, how do I put it, networking. Mm-hmm. And it's a skill I'm thankfully still using today, but it was a hard skill to learn, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. And I think that there's such a fine line. Some people describe, you know, you kind of mentioned politicking, and in the service, I know just from anecdote that people have shared with me, but also I'd say in police work, it's very common. People's like have this notion or this sentiment like, hey, I'm not going to play the politics, or I'm not going to brown nose. And I mean, you can call it that, or you can look at it more broadly to say, hey, like there's different kinds of people that react differently. And if you can read people and you can talk to people of all types and not, you know, insert ego, and you can get along, then you can definitely advance yourself and your interests and that of your team, and basically collaborate. Right. And so I kind of hear that, like you got into a leadership position, and by learning that, probably made you a lot more effective.
Oh, absolutely. I remember, I've told this story to all my friends. My second week on my ship, happy-go-lucky ensign, just trying to learn things. My chief comes up to me and says, hey, HT3 so-and-so, it was passed out in a hotel room high on drugs. And I'm like, well, specifically cocaine and heroin, both of them. And I was like, fantastic. Oh, what do I do? And he's like, I need you to talk to the CEO, make a report. And I'm like, so it really makes you learn effective leadership skills and obviously formal presentation skills. So I am grateful, though. It definitely was a high stress environment. Yeah, I want that to be clear for sure.
Yeah. Sounds like you got thrown into the deep end, but that's sometimes the best way you learn, right?
It is. Often, you know, like I'll be honest, because of my experience in the Navy, it seems like the civilian sector, if you will, is significantly easier. And I notice it's just people will start to freak out over what I realize is actually minor problems. And I just, it makes you more resilient at the end of the day.
Yeah. So what helped you decide, or did that kind of change, like how long you wanted to be in the service and what you're looking to get out of it and grow from? And then what ultimately led you to the decision of ending your career when you did?
Yeah. So what I realized in my time in the service, it required a lot of my attention and energy, and I didn't realize while I was at the Naval Academy that this is it's a lifestyle. It's not just a job. And that's the biggest difference between the service and first responders and other careers is that it's a lifestyle. It's not a go to work, go home kind of thing. It is a, you live it, you breathe it, you talk about it, you can get interrupted at any second of the day about it. And that really got to me after a while. And I just realized the lifestyle didn't quite align with what I personally like. And even though I do enjoy seeing new places, I enjoy meeting new people, but it was the lifestyle and the lack of consistency and routine that just made it harder for me to live on a day-to-day basis. And it also makes it harder to stay connected with family, with my husband. And it became so overwhelming that eventually the easier tasks became really challenging. I couldn't focus. And I was experiencing what now the World Health Organization calls burnout. And we've all heard this, right?
Yeah.
And burnout now is this modern phenomena because we are overworking ourselves and under recovering ourselves. And it gets us to this point of being brain fried. And I just couldn't live like that anymore. Mm-hmm. And that eventually led to my decision to separate.
Yeah. Well, good for you. And this is I'm glad you brought up the specific topics and the themes of like the lifestyle not agreeing with you, right? I think that we're continually changing, our circumstances are changing. What might have been serving you really well X number of years ago, you know, wasn't serving you that well anymore, right? And so I think it is easier, right, for people to recognize like, hey, your standard military career might be 4-ish years, and everyone can recognize, I hope everyone can recognize, like that's a huge sacrifice and amount of service to provide your community, your country, and to your brothers and sisters. But I feel like those in first responder land, whether it's firefighter or EMT or police or corrections, like it's really hard to just take that chunk of time and say like, oh, that was really good. I developed skills. I served my community, and now it's time to transition to something else. Maybe it sounds weird as a recruiter to be talking about this so frequently now, but maybe because I'm mid-career where I'm like, hey, I would love for everyone to have a very fruitful 30-year career. I just also would prefer that everyone really take care of themselves and their families. And if it's not agreeing with them for whatever reason, then maybe we assess. Maybe we look at a different assignment. And here I am, cushy, like in a, you can see me, I'm at a desk, right? And so that's like my majority of my job. But I also think that that could be really helpful for a lot of people. And I've seen it be really helpful for a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. You know, my original contract after the Naval Academy was 5 years, and then my resignation got denied, and I had to serve an additional 2.5.
How does that work? Because I'm not familiar.
Yeah, who knew that when officers take their oath of office, it is a forever until you resign and your resignation is approved. Just because you submit a resignation doesn't mean it will get approved. So, yeah.
Were you doing too good of a job then? It's almost like
I don't know. They recommended me for early command, which is where I could potentially be the commanding officer of a small, really small ship.
Yeah, but it sounds like you're doing too good of a job.
Yeah, maybe I was doing too good.
You got to pull like the office space when you stop going, and then you get a promotion. And you're like, what is going on?
Yeah, but to your point, you're right. With the first responders, it's not like they could just submit a resignation and then start a new career. I know that field is, or really both, because if you submit a resume as a first responder or a veteran who recently separated, a lot of companies don't really understand what your job was. So they're often not really valuing it, which is such a bummer because we all know what we did. We know all the blood, sweat, and tears we really committed, but these companies don't quite understand the depth of experience it is. And And unfortunately, it's kind of, they look at it as like, oh, that you were, you know, killing babies and shit. Excuse me. You're killing babies. And,
well, some people are, you know, argued that way, and maybe on another end of the spectrum, or, you know, far closer to the center, might be, well, you're a soldier or you're a sailor, and there's a million like you that sat on a ship and followed orders. You're like, well, no, it could be a lot more nuanced than that. I was a leader, and I had these challenges and these projects and managed these people and disciplined and, you know, all these things, right?
Exactly. And same with first responders. I'm sure, you know, they follow a type of chain of command. I'm sure there's still program management and project management, personnel management that goes in there. But unfortunately, not a lot of companies quite understand that. So it doesn't seem like veterans and first responders who are transitioning into a new career get the attention they deserve.
Yeah. And I appreciate bringing that up too, right? When we're talking about just general wellness, like a lot of this passion project, Blue Grit, all of it is really to build awareness and empathy within and outside the job. And so a lot of times you do see veterans. I love that it's a tagline of a lot of companies to, you know, provide jobs for veterans, because maybe if you have people in the organization or running the organization, they know what it takes, and they know the breadth of experience that a lot of people, service members have. Same with cops, right? You might have cops that are more apt to hire ex-cops because they have that experience, or maybe they had someone in the family to know, yeah, it's not just you walking around the city blocks, you know, swinging a stick. Like, no, you had to, some people had to run ops, and some people were trainers, and some people were subject matter experts, and, you know, called in to testify on behalf of a lot of things. And these are very technical skills, and there's also soft skills and be able to talk to people. That is a common thing where a lot of people that leave just try to tell, you know, even on this podcast, they try to show and explain to the others, like, hey, if you are thinking about it and you're fearful, like, there, you do have a wealth of experience. We just have to learn how to articulate it and re-enter the job market and all those things.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not sure what the first responders have, but there's this program for right before you separate, and they try to teach you how to be a civilian in the workforce. Mm-hmm. I personally don't find it very effective, I'm thankful there's something at least. I'm not sure if the first responders have that.
No, there are a couple organizations that work on that. Like I've found and just started getting more familiarized with, as far as like cop to corporate and just resources. But yeah, I'm hoping that this can also provide that, right? Ultimately, you know, a cop or anyone isn't doing much good for themselves or anyone if they feel stuck and they really don't feel like they have options. I feel like people should explore their options and know them. And a lot of times I feel like that can help you find and reinvigorate you if you, let's say you recognize you have options and then you choose to stay. Like, that's so powerful, right? It reinvigorates that purpose, and you're like, no, I don't have to be here, but I choose to be here. And that mindset shift is so powerful.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
One thing I want to, I mean, there's a lot of things I want to talk about, but I just want to start off by, not start off, I guess to transition to the next chunk would be, as soon as I started learning about you and we connected, and I saw what you've done and what you're doing and just the content you're putting out as far as health and wellness, like, I knew I wanted to have you on the show because it's all straightforward. It's all non-dogmatic. You know, you're putting out this information that I think just about every post I've seen, or what you write about, what you discuss, is all stuff that I would feel so comfortable putting out to my people. And that I would basically echo almost verbatim a lot of the things you say as far as how you approach food and nutrition, how you approach exercise. The space, and this is kind of where Blue Grit even started, it was initially a lot more just health advice that I thought would be helpful that I've learned along the way, helpful to other first responders in general population. But the space is so crowded and it's so clickbaity, and you know, the fads are there, like the workout fads, the diet fads. And so I do want to underline like how much I appreciate your balanced approach and, And that's why I do want to highlight you. I do want to bring you elevate and just bring that type of approach out, because that's what's ultimately going to help the most people the best way.
Absolutely. Thank you. I know when I started this, I was just so excited, just pretty much just throwing shit at a wall. And I was like, oh my God, I love it all. And then I realized, you know, people don't always understand, all of the health mumbo jumbo out there. There's so many people spreading misinformation that they think, oh, I have to eat only meat, or I have to eat only vegetables, or I have to never eat this XYZ again. And it's not the case. Like, that's the thing. It's, you can have a healthy lifestyle, still eat all the foods you love, still do all the activities, still travel. But what it comes down to is doing what works for you. Because what works for me isn't necessarily what's going to work for you. And that, but,
absolutely.
And I know it sounds so basic, like almost condescendingly basic, but I swear it's not. Because let's say someone prefers 3 strength training days and 1 Pilates day for their strength workouts. Great. Mm-hmm. That for me, I don't do a lot of Pilates. Sometimes I'll do a little bit of yoga. And in addition to my strength training and my jiu-jitsu and my walking, maybe for someone else, all they want to do is run. Granted, I recommend you still strength train to complement that and keep your tendons strong. But maybe one person, they want their training to be focused around running. Someone else, they want it to be more focused on jiu-jitsu. Someone else, they want it to be focused on powerlifting, or just to be able to pick up their kids when they're old, just be able to stand from the toilet. Because unfortunately, so many of the reasons why elderly personnel get entered into these aging facilities is because they can't do that half squat from the toilet into a standing position. The foundation of that is just quad strength. Like, do you have the quad strength to lift yourself up from sitting down? And unfortunately, if you're not, you know, maintaining that muscle as you get older, you're going to be more likely to break your hip. You're going to be more likely to get injured. You're going to be more likely to gain an unhealthy amount of weight. I kind of got off on a tangent there, but it's just, if you do the program that works for you, you're most likely to stick to it. You know, and that's why I give recommendations that you can use specifically for your own program or lifestyle. I have a friend, she doesn't really like working out, but she stays active all day. She walks her dog. She hikes all the time. And she's always moving about, so that's kind of like more of a European lifestyle, right? And because at the end of the day, you know, there weren't gyms back in the caveman days. You know, the cavemen were not deadlifting. I'd say that, but
yeah, not just for the sake of it, right? Might be to get a, you know, a carcass or something, but not just. For yucks, like 3 sets of 10, right?
Exactly. So, you know, if you're not having that bio-individual approach to your own lifestyle, nothing's ever going to stick. And that is what I try to hone. And it's why I post some mindset stuff as well. And like, if you hate your body, you're probably not going to do things to nourish your body. You're not going to do things to feel stronger. You're not going to eat the foods that love you back. And so it really, like, you really have to be able to know yourself and know your body. So it takes that body intelligence to really even get into these lifestyle changes.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I want to rewind a little bit. To speak on elderly folks that are just losing that mobility, right? They can't get low enough for a normal toilet. So then they got to, you know, go into a home with a raised toilet and railings and all that. And it's just that notion of hey, there's like low hanging fruit. There's these simple things that we can do and do through our lives to enhance mobility. And I'd heard a number of times that a lot of times it's not the elderly falling or, you know, that's the most critical thing, but it's not being able to fall correctly, right? Not being able to brace themselves or react. So their reflexes are poor because they haven't exercised and they're not training really anything, right? And I'm not saying like, you know, they're doing all this, you know, reflexivity and bounding and all this. I'm just saying like they're not moving right. And so you hear a lot of movement specialists talk about that. And then just the ability to get down on the ground can be a huge thing. You know, they look at populations, you know, in East Asia where people sleep on low beds or they sleep on the ground, and the incidence of huge injuries aren't as high. It doesn't mean you have to sleep on the ground, but it's just like, hey, if you can, as you are in your 30s, 40s, 50s and on, if you can just get down, you know, comfortably and play with your kids and, you know, crawl around the ground and get back up and not ache and hurt, that's probably a good thing. And then if you can't do that, then maybe you can work with some programs or a trainer or something to get you into that, right? So it doesn't have to be this, well, I'm not trying to, you know, clean and press X number of weight, but maybe you just want to be able to get down to the ground, crawl around and not have your back hurt.
Yeah. And the crazy thing that people don't realize, it's like, you don't have to go to the gym and lift for 2 hours and then go on your 4 mile run and then come home and bench press your spouse. Like that is not the case. So you really only need just to like maintain your muscle mass 3 days a week. You can do a 3 day split. And the lifts don't even need to be that long, as long as you're stimulating your muscle 3 times a week, your upper, lower, or you could push, pull, leg, like whatever programming you prefer. This strength training just needs to happen if you want to be able to maintain your muscle mass. And of course it's not just doing those three. It's not like, oh, I worked out, now I can sit for the rest of the day. It's not like, the human body is meant to be moving. In fact, in the blue zone, blue zones, people on average move every 20 minutes in the day. And it could mean, you know, sitting, having coffee, and then going for a walk with a friend, or having breakfast and then working in the garden, or just cleaning around the house, or just staying moving. And that's often the secret that goes into a lifestyle of longevity, is this acceptance of moving every day and not just doing your workout and sitting the rest of the day. Because, you know, yes, it's great that you're doing your workout, but if you stay moving, you are more likely to not have as many mental health days. You're not as likely to get injured. You're able to keep your, you're able to maintain your muscle mass. And people underestimate the value of their muscle mass and think, oh, I could just take Ozempic and lose weight. Mm. And
Ozempic, yeah, we went there. Yeah.
I know. I said
no. There's no miracle drug. There's no miracle solution, guys.
Yeah. There isn't. And, you know, maybe, of course, you know, maybe in certain situations it's called for. I understand. But it doesn't erase the lifestyle change that needs to happen. Like, sure, maybe Ozempic could be a catalyst and then you transition to a lifestyle if you really need it. But there is never a quick fix. It is the daily in and out, the daily action, the tiny habits that you do every single day.
Yeah, I think all that's so huge. I mean, you hit on so many things. I'm trying to take notes, but then I'm not going to hit it all. But to rewind, the blue zones. And so those that don't know, Google it like right now. And it's at a base level, there are areas throughout the world that are analyzed for having the most centenarians. So the most people that have lived over or live over the age of 100. And this author studied the crossover habits or traits that were all in common from these places around the world, like Sardinia and Okinawa And the biggest things off the cuff are a lot of real food, you know, just real plants and animals. They weren't all, there's some that kind of, some commentary that infer that they're all plant-based, but a large variety of plant and real food, right? A lot of them are eating meat as well. But a lot of movement, right? And that's not quote unquote working out, but that's walking around town and, you know, going, walking to the store or the market to get your groceries and socializing on walks, gardening, like just normal activities and tasks, and then strong social connections and community, whether that's faith or otherwise. So I think that those are really impactful to look at. How do we make sure that we are emulating that to the best of our abilities? Because that's really what makes you healthy, right? Not having a 6 or 8 pack, not being able to, like you said, bench press your spouse. And that leads into, I think, the biggest thing for people to really think about and identify is, what is your goal? And then I'd add why, right? And to speak a little bit about myself is, I learned so much about health and wellness, I suppose, just through my career. I was super interested in it. And I did a lot of experimentation, not because I thought it'd be the best, but I was just curious, right? So, you know, I tried keto and I tried intermittent fasting and all these things. And I guess, like, what I, before I go down that huge rabbit hole of all the things I tried, what would have been really helpful is just to recognize what was my goal, like what was my intent. And then even if I explain that right now, I think most people that know anything would probably say that it was not a good goal or not a good way to get to that goal. And what I mean is that I was trying to fix my sleep, and I'd heard enough little anecdotes that, like, oh, keto will help your sleep. It's like, well, it could for some people, but when my sleep issues were already due to high stress and cortisol, reducing your carb intake dramatically and working out the way I was, which was heavy lifting and high intensity stuff, because that's what I really enjoyed. Cortisol was like through the roof. So in hindsight, it makes a lot of sense that that was not helpful for my health or my sleep. I think most nutritionists and dietitians probably would say that, but your keto advocates that I was looking at would say, no, you just got to keep powering through. Your body just hasn't fully adapted yet. So know your goal, know your why, and try to look at the big picture. It's not going to be simple. And as you said, it is super individualistic.
Absolutely. Yeah. And on the keto thing, it was a diet originally created to help diabetics manage their blood sugar. Like, if you already have diabetes, you're going to be going on keto, or to help someone with epilepsy. And mm-hmm. now it's turned into a health craze, and people are who don't need to do it are doing it. And women are messing up their hormones. Men are, like you said, messing up their sleep, which is so important for testosterone production. And there are so many consequences to people starting these diets, not realizing that it may not work for them. Maybe someone who has pre-metabolic syndrome, where your fasting blood sugars is at 100, and you're almost on the line to get diabetes. I would say, okay, maybe you should try keto. But you know, for someone very active like that, I would never recommend keto, because you're going to just completely dump your glycogen stores in your muscles, and you're going to feel like total crap. And there are so many other diets out there too that people don't necessarily be doing. And kind of like, if you look at the intermittent fasting trend, that, you know, don't get me wrong, I fast at night. It works for me. I personally don't like to eat and then go to bed. It makes me feel lethargic, especially because most people, their digestion slows around 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. And that's why if you eat a late meal at night, then go to bed, you wake up bloated, you feel like crap. But maybe for some people, you know, intermittent fasting could really mess up their hormones. So you have to really take an individual approach to these things. And that is why every now and then I have to make the boring post. Do what works for you.
Yeah. But people want the easy answer, right? And for some people, that's Ozempic, and some people, that's they want you to say, they want Audrey to tell them, hey, I've hired you, tell me to do keto and I'll do it. And you're like, well, I don't know, like, it might not be great for you. But if I were pretty sedentary and I had, you know, let's say like a lot more body fat and I didn't really love working out, then maybe I don't think that'd be unreasonable for someone to say, hey man, like, start on a lower carb approach, see how you feel. If you love those foods and you love how you feel, then, like, you know, keep toggling the carbs down. Especially if I don't really want to lift weights. Maybe I just want to walk and I want to hike and that's like that's my jam, then maybe do what's right for me. But yeah, at the same time, we gotta be careful about looking at these little examples, because I think that there might be something to, I believe and know that there is something to individual genetics, right? And based on your ethnicity, based on your lifestyle and your genetics, like, all these things factor into what's going to work for you and your preference as well, right? You mentioned earlier, whatever you're going to actually want to do is what you're going to stick to doing. So that's really helpful. But if you look through social media or just the online space, you're going to find these specimens, men and women, that some of them, let's just say, could probably do a spread of different things, and they might all always look fantastic, and they might always perform fantastically. If you know any really high level athletes, whether those in high school or college, we know a lot of athletes and professionals as well that are pretty open about how much junk food they consume. They are very, like, they're that upper echelon. To say or infer that you could eat junk food and perform at your best is probably unreasonable. So just to recognize everyone's different.
Yeah, everyone is different. And you know, to be fair to those athletes, like, think about their activity level. Like, the biggest lifestyle change you can make is your movement, because, like, let's say if you go from being sedentary 3,000 steps a day to, let's say, 10 to 16,000 steps a day, and you kept your diet, I am positive that you would start to shed some weight. Just because the amount of movement those athletes are doing on a daily basis, like, they need to consistently replenish. They're training between maybe like 3 to maybe 4 or 5 times a day, depending on what their sport is. And when they're not training, they're often studying, which requires a lot of focus, a lot of energy. And you know, that's what, you know, some people think, like, oh, athlete so-and-so eats XYZ, so I can. Well, what does your activity level match that of the Olympic athlete? But of course, you know, I'm not saying you should be afraid of your food. No way. Like, you deserve, just like every human here, to have food freedom and not feel constrained in what you can eat, unless it really extremely bothers you. That should be the only reason you don't eat a food, not because you don't think you deserve it. We all deserve food. We all deserve to eat and to feel nourished. And that, which is why I am always advocating, like, eat higher protein. You want to feel full. You don't want to just, like, oh, I'm trying to lose weight, I only can have this rice cake.
Why else would people want to eat more protein? Because I love that, and that's, I've actually, like, blogged about that, like, prioritize protein.
Oh, absolutely. So I am always writing about increasing your protein intake, because that stimulates your muscle protein synthesis. So especially in the mornings. So if you have at least 30 grams of protein, that's going to, for adults, that's going to stimulate your muscle recovery, your muscle growth, and of course, make you feel fuller throughout the day. For me, I personally like to have higher than 30 grams of protein, just because my activity level is very high. And I do have certain body composition goals. if you're trying to lose fat and or gain muscle, you're going to want that higher protein content, because if you're on a calorie deficit, which you should be if you're trying to lose fat, you need to have that higher protein intake, so that way you're not losing fat and muscle. Because it's the moment you are on a calorie deficit, but also have a very minimal amount of protein, you are, one, you're going to feel fatigued and tired. Your workouts are going to be feel like total shit. And then two, you're not going to end up having the look that you want. You're going to not get toned. You're not going to look muscular. In fact, you're going to look like the skinny fat phenomena. And often, you know, that body type is acquired because it's a higher carb or higher fat with a low protein intake. Yeah. So, and if you're remotely interested in your recovery and your muscles, which you should be, because muscle is the organ of longevity, mm-hmm. you're going to want to eat a higher protein diet.
Yeah. And I love that you talk about that. You know, protein, high protein is, I mean, kind of recently, even for people that follow a lot of the health space and talk, is that, well, protein can contribute towards aging, and having large muscle mass can contribute towards aging as well. So you have some of these quote unquote biohackers that are trying to almost minimize the amount of like muscle that they have. But really, that's what's going to make you durable. That's what's going to help you live better. And we're not talking about, you know, some people, you know, look you up or look me up and like, well, they're even too like, you know, meat-heady for me. It's like, no, it's just, that's what's going to make you fall. You know, as we talk about mobility, your fall prevention, you just being able to move through life. You just, as far as like adapting to whatever may come, that's what's going to make the huge difference. And it's good to see that there's a lot more, resource on that now.
Oh yes. And the crazy thing that a lot of us don't realize is when you are strength training and when you're activating your muscle, you're also strengthening your bones. You're increasing your bone density and reducing your risk of osteoporosis, and your bones just getting frail and more likely to break as you get older. So really, you know, strength training is a form of taking care of your future self.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu, I don't know. It kind of damages your body a little bit. But strength training, 100% for longevity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. Like, we'll talk about it. But I got into jiu-jitsu because, you know, I was chasing all kinds of different fitness goals, especially through my 20s and early 30s. And there were stints where I was trying to get big. Like in my early 20s, I ended up just getting puffy and kind of fat. Just eating crud. But I did get pretty strong, like a lot stronger than I would have, you know, my younger self would have imagined, just strength training and sticking to a healthier diet. But then at a certain point, it was just, you know, why am I trying to maintain these maxes or build on a max when my joints are feeling worse? And now in my late 30s, I was like, okay, like check the ego. Like, what is it for? And it's for performance and how I feel and durability, right? So I don't need to, you know, deadlift as much as I used to. And, you know, that was kind of hard for me, but, you know, I was able to get there. But jiu-jitsu is something that, man, like the carryover to law enforcement is obvious. But then I was like, you know, you see a lot of people that age well and they stay mobile through jiu-jitsu, and maybe that'll be good and kind of a body friendly thing. But ironically, it has not really been for me. I'm still an avid advocate. But yeah, just little like surprising tweaks and aches, and recently it's been my jaw, and I don't know how much of that is because, you know, my dentist was already saying I was grinding my teeth, but then, you know, just as you said, like getting choked out a couple times here and there, but the pressure of some of this, like trying to make it good training for the other person and not tapping right away, but also just not trying to be a slouch myself, so not tapping right away. But I wonder how much of that has contributed towards this, like this achiness and this nagging pain in my jaw lately. So yeah. I think it's just part of getting older. There's always something.
Yeah, there's always something. But, you know, as we age, if we prioritize our protein and strength training, you're going to be able to mitigate so many problems that typically come our way. So just up your protein intake, probably a little more than you think, and strength train. I'll be honest, years ago, when I realized I needed to change the way I eat, I actually went vegan back in 2017. I went vegan and was vegan for about 2 years. And by the end of it, I was a vegan cardio queen, and that's all I had all of the processed vegan diet. All I did was run. I hardly ever strength trained. Maybe I did a little bit, maybe once, maybe twice a week. Nothing crazy. And by the end, it seemed like I had lost a lot of the definition that I had before I went on. And I was exhausted a lot of the time. I was often really moody. I was bloated a lot.
Do you think that was all the fiber, or was it just digestion in general?
It probably was just the high fiber. Because if you eat like really, like the daily intake should be between 25 and 35 grams of fiber a day. I'm pretty sure I was having closer to 50 and 60 grams of fiber a day. And that is a lot for the body. Though I will say your microbiome does adjust should you go meatless, to prioritizing fiber over more protein based molecules. But it still doesn't mean that's optimal for the body. I had ended up having a lot of energy issues at the end of being vegan. And when I switched to vegetarian, it was a little better. But then I switched out my running for that sculpt. You and I'm talking about these like little baby weights or the dancing arms.
You're going to tone, right? You're going to tone that muscle.
Yeah, you're going to tone. It's
marketing. Yeah, it's marketing, right?
I know. And little did I know, I didn't realize that, you know, muscle mass only increases or decreases. You cannot just tone it. You can lose fat to highlight your muscle and look more defined, but your muscle cannot get longer. Your muscle cannot be lean. It just increases or decreases. But a lot of this marketing, because if you look at the Pilates body, the bar body, a lot of them are originally like ballerinas who are naturally slender and thin.
All right. What is a podcast without a little technical difficulty? So Audrey, I'll start you back off. You're talking about adjusting from vegan to vegetarian, and then we're talking about toning. So why don't you take off from there?
Yeah. As much as I, you know, love doing those little workouts, now I use them just as a rest day activity, just because those workouts are fun. You have to get me wrong. Like, they're fun. It's great. It's a great movement to do instead of just sit down on your rest day, because your rest day should still be fairly active. Mm-hmm. I just kept doing what was trendy for the longest time and was wondering why it wasn't working for me. I kept eating the processed vegetarian diet foods, like, oh, like the vegan label, oh, the gluten-free label. Oh, okay, must be healthy. And it's not necessarily the case, especially because if you look at the nutrition label, right, the FDA allows a 20% margin of error. So really, the calories and macronutrients you see on there could actually be incorrect. And so because my diet was so high in these processed foods, and I was doing these trendy sculpting workouts, my body type was not, I was becoming more flabby. Let's just say that. I was getting flabbier. And I was just like, what in the world? And when I had, I, you really have to think, what are the basics, right? The most research supports to lose fat, you need to be in a calorie deficit, right? Like, okay, calorie deficit. If you want to maintain your muscle mass, you need to have a higher protein intake. Okay, so 0.8 grams to 1 gram per pound of weight. And then you need to be strength training. You need to be having your 10,000 to 16,000 steps a day. And people really underestimate the daily steps. Like they think, oh, I do my workout, you know, I do a morning walk and I'm good. But if you're not hitting, how do I put this? The mortality rates look at it right next to step count, the more steps you take in a day, the risk of all cause mortality decreases. Yeah. So if you're just consistently moving throughout the day, keep getting your daily steps, you are decreasing your lifestyle disease chances dramatically. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
And I wasn't really thinking about these basic steps to take. And I was just trying to do the trendy thing because it's so confusing. This saturated wellness space is so confusing. And especially if like someone shirtless in a grocery store says, you're putting poison into your, into your shopping cart. And especially if you don't know nutrition, you don't know good programming, it's going to be confusing. So, it's so easy to get confused in the space when at the end of the day, the answer is meat and potatoes.
Yeah, basically. It's just eat real food, right? Grows from the ground. It was alive in its least adulterated form most of the time, right? So, I think it is that simple stuff. And to share, like, I went down the Netflix show hole of, you know, plant-based vegan stuff where I started feeling terrible about the environment. And like, that's the whole point, right? And it gets at your values. And I'm not, no judgment for if you're plant-based, you're vegan, vegetarian, that's a personal choice, like good for you. However, I think it's worth it that if your reason is because of animal treatment, then consider looking at other resources because a lot of the plant food industry does take out a lot of animals, right? It's all these fields. They're not necessarily best for the environment. So again, I think it's just a greater conversation. What is your goal and what's your why? But I'd say that all to say, yeah, I did look at plant-based and it's funny. I was visiting my now wife, you know, when we were long distance and, you know, so she's at work and I'm just on her Netflix account in her apartment, just going through all this stuff. I was like, we need to go plant-based. She's like, what are you talking about? It was literally like she left for the day and she came back. She's like, what did you do with my fiance, right? And then, but then quickly, this is my personality, right? I just do the deep dive. I was trying to see if I could maintain protein levels and get it all through pea and brown rice protein. And then I start down that and then I find, really quickly, like, yeah, there's a lot of heavy metals in all that. So, you got to watch out for this. And then, what are you going to be deficient in? It's like, oh, B vitamins. You have to supplement that somehow. And I was like, okay, maybe I need to pivot back the other way. And those that know me know that I, you know, messed around with carnivore for a little bit. I think the longest I did it was 3 weeks and I was like still 90%. So it wasn't pure, but it was just more to see how it felt. So I was informed and I was just curious. So, again, when I say, I've tried different things. A lot of it's been for experimentation, not because I thought it was going to be the end all be all, but it did inform me a lot of things. I mean, I certainly felt way better on mostly meat than mostly vegetables for a stint. However, I did notice like that loss in kind of power, you know, that's the glycogen storage that we're talking about with low carb or no carb. So, we got to know why we're doing these things. My buddy, who's known me for so many years, he was a cop, now a firefighter, always joked that he's like, man, I ask you every like 2 weeks what you're doing. And so it was something different. I'm like, yeah, I'm just messing around with stuff. Right. But his joke was like, dude, you're going to have it figured out by the time you're 60. And I guarantee I know what it's going to be. I was like, oh no, let me tell you. I already think I know it's going to be eat moderately mostly real whole food, kind of paleo-esque. You know, some rice, some grain is okay. And just moderation. He's like, yeah, I'm sure that's going to be the thing. So it's something we've always joked about for, you know, more than 10 years.
Yeah. And it's so funny that, you know, no one wants to advertise, hey, it's good for you to have that very tasty family meal that you meet up with your parents on Sundays. And yes, have the dessert. You deserve it. You worked hard all week. You're like, it's not so popular to say that an indulgent meal is good for you, because if you're consistently restricting and denying yourself things, you're eventually going to binge. I was on that binge cycle for years. I would undereat during the week, binge on the weekends. And it's a vicious cycle, especially when you combine it with that active duty lifestyle where it is a high stress environment, and then all your friends want to do on the weekend is go out drink. So then you have the compound effects of binging and the alcohol together, and then you're wondering why you are unhappy with your mental health, your physical health. You're unhappy with your social life and your why, like you said, like your purpose. If you don't have an idea of what your purpose is, you're more likely to make unhealthy decisions. So it is so connected, and it comes down to, are you doing the things that you actually want to be doing, or are you doing what you think is trendy? And it took me so long to be able to say, oh no, I cannot drink because XYZ. I really don't want to eat that right now. Or, hey, no thanks, that makes me feel like crap, I'm not going to eat it. Instead of being like, oh, I'm out, I might as well eat. It's like, it takes knowing your body. It takes not just loving yourself, because I think that's a bit complex. It takes accepting what you are and who you are.
It makes me think of a lot of things, and there's like this, there's this subtle, sometimes unwritten, like peer pressure when you go out and you get this, you know, table of food and everyone's having a drink. And, you know, I think it says a lot about our culture, and it's not just law enforcement and military culture, but it's certainly prevalent in that. But even when I'm out with my college buddies, like, if I don't get a beer that day, then there has to be a reason, right? Like, oh, do you have to leave soon? And it's like, no. But even when times when I was trying to diet down and leaning out, then it was a thing. Like, oh, are you going to cut? And it's like, I mean, I was, but at the same time, like, why does that have to be a thing? Why does it have to be weird? And other people make it weird if you're not having a drink. And I think that we just need to recognize, I'm not saying don't drink. Like, I love to, you know, partake here and there. But I know that lifestyle you're talking about, where on the weekends you're going hard, and that was certainly my like post college years and being young and single. Like, but did it serve me? And no. And like, what was I doing it for? And it was just habit. You know, you didn't really think anything of it. It was just kind of normal. So I'm so glad that, you know, I've graduated past that and just the feelings and the drag from that. But I want to ask you. I initially wanted to ask you kind of. You know, we talked before the recording started about all these lessons learned that you wish you'd known. I think you kind of covered a lot of that, right, as far as like different things you've tried. But what was the precipice? Like, what was the catalyst for you moving into this space of wellness and wanting to help other people with it?
Yeah. So what really started was I was reading a book called Beyond the Pill by Dr. Jolene Brighton. And I was on birth control at the time. And I was reading, and I'm like, man, you know, it seems like the birth control pill could really affect your body in ways that really doesn't help you. And there's certainly other ways to prevent a pregnancy. And so I said, okay, I'm going to get off birth control. And what's crazy is that 3 weeks after getting off the pill, I was creative. I lost a few pounds. I probably lost 5 to 6 pounds. Mm-hmm. I would wake up in a good mood for no reason. I was more present, and it was at the time I didn't realize it, but there's a brain ovary connection that gets interrupted by the pill that prevents the ovulation. And it was really after experiencing just that like flood of mindfulness and joy that I realized, I said, wow, like the things that we do every day, because I was taking the pill every day, affects your life dramatically. And you may not see it today, but you will probably see it in a year to 2 years to 3 years from now. And so then I made another adjustment. I said, okay, I walk my dogs, and I started walking my dogs in the morning, and it first started out as half a mile. Then I made it a mile every day. I called it Mile with Mommy. And then one habit after another, I realized, said, wow, like lifestyle makes the biggest difference. So I was walking more. Because I was walking more, I decided, okay, what other ways can I get, movement in? And so I kind of broke free of the long, lean workout, and I transitioned into more strength training. And then I got my nutrition coach certification and realized there's so much more to nutrition. We need to prioritize real foods. We need to prioritize protein. We need to prioritize our sleep and stress management and our social life. And your social life, meaning your sense of community. And when you have those pillars down, it affects you in a way that you're allowed to focus on your life's purpose. You're allowed to really pursue your dreams because you're already feeling good. If you're not feeling good, there's no way you could actually pursue your dreams, because you're only focused on the misery that you feel. So if you take care of of how you feel before you take care of your body and your mindset, you can really make a difference in the rest of your life. And so I made these small habit changes. Maybe initially I was doing the habit stacking thing, mm-hmm. So I would cook breakfast and listen to a podcast or an audiobook at the same time. Anytime I was driving to work, I would try to put on something educational on the car radio. Anytime there was something to learn, I kept my mind engaged. I stayed active. I nourished my body. And slowly over time, I need to share this with people so they can make these gradual changes too, because it's nothing crazy. Like, I don't do anything that's like, wow, oh my God, Audrey, you're the fucking best. Like, no, I do very basic, boring things. Like I said, I walk my dogs. I'll jump on my personal trampoline a little bit. I go to the gym. I call my mom on a walk.
Yeah.
I tried out a new sport, and ended up loving it.
Yeah.
Maybe jiu-jitsu is not your thing. Maybe you decided to finally do bodybuilding. I have a friend who started bodybuilding at age 50. She is 51 now, and she's shredded.
That's legit.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, exactly. And it's these little changes you can make to your everyday that make the biggest difference.
Yeah. I love that. I love how you just kept building. And because, when I was coaching a couple people here and there, and I think when people are so motivated, they want the whole slew, right? They want the prescription. Hey, tell me what to do, what to lift, when to lift, for how long, how many days a week. and what to eat. And I'm like, what do you want to do? What works for your schedule? You know, like, would you prefer to go to the gym twice a week for longer? Would you prefer to go every day for shorter? And like, well, I hadn't really thought about that. I'm like, all right, let's look at your day, look at your week. What do you like eating, right? Let's start there. And then what are the healthy foods we can build around? You know, like some people are naturally going to eat a little bit higher carb, and some people love fruit. They don't want to get rid of fruit. All right, then don't, right? Like, it's a real food. Like, in the right quantities, it's going to serve you well, right? So, no, I love that. I love that there's a reason why. And, I mean, I have a lot of friends that, you know, they came off the pill to get pregnant, and then they recognize this, like, brain clarity and this mood stability and things that I can't understand because I'm a dude, but I, you know, I hear their anecdotes and their shared stories that, you know, a lot of women saying, I'm never getting back on the pill. Like, I don't even, I think about that person, it doesn't even feel like me. And so it's such an interesting thing that's become so normalized and something I think about a lot, you know, having a young daughter and, you know, my wife and I talk about it, you know, cause she was on the pill for so many years. And yeah, it's just not to make the conversation about something else, but it's so cool to hear your experience and how that, I guess that awareness, that learning informed how you want to just kind of make these intentional gradual changes that have just better helped you serve yourself and your health. You know, no one's making a ton of money selling this notion of moderation or doing what's right for you.
Unfortunately,
but we need to change that, right? And so you're going to be one of the many examples where people like listen and say, hey, if it sounds extreme, if it sounds too good to be true, then like look the other way and look at this normal, like balanced approach from people like Audrey.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm not saying I'm the best out there, but the main thing is that, you know, you have to find a way that fits you. You don't fit the way, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, it's just like you don't fit into a pair of pants. The pants fit you. So it's, you know, you have to do something that it really works with your lifestyle. If you're trying to be more active, you can't just, or I guess you can, but it won't stick. Just to jump into a workout routine and realize, oh, I'm so sore for why am I even doing this? I'm so weak and pathetic, and then stop. Mm-hmm. Or you can, instead of doing an intense routine every single day, 7 days a week, you could just try strength training one day a week if you're not doing it at all. Or, you know, maybe you even start a rung below that. You're like, I'm just going to go for a morning walk today. Or what I always recommend, after you eat a meal, or specifically a heavy meal, go for a walk. Post-meal walk helps with digestion. Adding one habit one habit that can really fit into your life and then build on that is going to be the best route for you. Otherwise, you're going to just be dog paddling and just be completely lost and have no change whatsoever, especially if that's what if that's what you want. People naturally want to be healthy. People don't want to be miserable and sad in the dark on a couch. You know, people want to be vibrant and resilient. So it's up to us to make the changes ourselves. And yeah. It's exciting, and I'm glad that people are starting to realize that, you know, lifestyle factors are a huge factor in how we feel and look. And it seems like it's only fairly recent that it's becoming trendy to have the healthy lifestyle, the quote unquote wellness lifestyle. So, you know, granted, I'm glad. I'm glad a healthy lifestyle is becoming trendy because hopefully you can find the aspects that work for you to fit into your own lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, I love that. So I want to leave off with where people can find you, what services, like what most clients are looking for from you when they hit you up. And then anything else you want to leave the listeners with. And I'll have all the details and links in the show notes as well.
Well, thank you for having me. But you can find me on Instagram, on TikTok, Lemonade. Yeah, I'm not hip. At Wellness Audrey. Or
I don't even know what that is. Did you say Lemon what?
Lemonade.
Okay.
I know. All right. Pinterest and Medium. They all have the same username, at Wellness Audrey. And yeah, give me a shout. Slide into my DMs. Ask me questions. I love to help people out. Like, I believe this information should be free, and that's why I do it. I don't think it should be confusing on what we should do on a daily basis. Eat your meals. Go for your walks. Do some strength training. Find a sport that you like. Do it. You know, it doesn't have to be complicated.
I love that. It's something that, you know, I've definitely talked to a lot of dudes about, as far as like what little things they can do or what big things they can do depending on what they want, what their goals are. And so it's super refreshing to find someone that's putting out amazing content. It's free, it's approachable, it's correct, like it's balanced, it's actually right. You know, whereas you look at a lot of these influencers and it's not going to help you, it's not going to help a lot of people, but it's trendy and it's a fad and they're going to jump on the next fad and they'll keep floating along. But, you know, there is this underdog spirit and this little guy, little gal thing about, hey, no, this is all, you know, pretty low hanging fruit, but Audrey knows what she's talking about. She can help you get there, right? You can follow along and just have this good insight and advice, or you can take the more guided approach, right? And she can help you get there, because it can still be a lot and trying to decide how to navigate things. And I think I keep hearing we all need mentors, we all need coaches in whatever angle of life we're trying to improve. And so this is very much one that can be so overwhelming, speaking from personal experience, where maybe you just need that nudge and that guidance. And so hit up Audrey and go from there.
Hell yeah, hit me up.
All right, cool. Hey, thanks again. It's been a pleasure connecting, and we will talk soon.
Talk soon. Thank you so much.